Here we go. Now this feels like my class in Ida Crown. All the students on their iPads. No one's actually listening. So, do I let them? Well, the recording started. Let's leave that aside. So I wanted to. Last week we were discussing Moda'ani, trying to take a fresh look at it. Look at it from a new angle, with some new added depth to it. And I thought it'd be fun to continue trying to do the same thing with certain very old, basic halachot, mitzvot that we learned at a young age, and to try and look at them with a fresh lens now. I don't know the last time anybody has tried as an adult to try and think about a new perspective on Moda'ani or Netilat Yadayim. So I thought the next thing, so let's try Netilat Yadayim and see what happens. So this is just what I discovered in my trying to increase my knowledge of Netilat Yadayim and the depth of understanding. So we'll see where it goes together. So let's look just in source number one. In the Shulchan Aruch, so he has in the very beginning, Yirchatz Yado V'Yavarech. So he says that when a person wakes up, you should wash your hands and make a bracha al Netilas Yadayim. Make a bracha of al Netilas Yadayim. Yidakdeg La'arot Alehin Mayim Gimel Pamim. You should be careful to pour the water on each hand three times. Lahavir Ruach Ra'a Sheshora Alehin. Why do we do this? Why do we do Netilas Yadayim? To get rid of the ruach ra'ah, the evil spirit, the impure spirit that rests on a person's hands while they're sleeping when they wake up. Okay, so what does that mean? That's what we're going to get back to. Lo yiga biyado, and you shouldn't touch with your hands, kodem netila, before you actually wash your hands, lapeh, your mouth, velo lachotem, or your nose, velo laznaim, your ears, velo yanaim, and not your eyes. Okay, so you shouldn't touch different parts of yourself before you wash your hands. So some people are very careful to have like a washing, little plastic thing next to their beds and wash right when you wake up. And some people, you walk to the bathroom as long as within the same house, within the same area, so then that's also okay. And if you need to rub your eyes, so there's like the sleeve trick, so these things. So that is the halacha. Okay, so what's this all about? What's going on here? What does it mean that there's this evil spirit? What is behind this mitzvah, this halacha of Netilat Yadayim? So, let's look in source number two. The Mishnah Berurah brings us a few different reasons. He writes the following. Harash Katav, the Rush, one of the Rishonim, writes that the reason why we wash our hands, Lefisha Yadayim Shel Adam Askaniotain. A person's hands, they're very busy. Your hands are very busy. V'efsha Shelo Yigab Ebasah Metunaf. And while you're sleeping, you don't know where your hands were going. So a person might have touched a part of the body that you should wash your hands after. Lezet tiknu chazal, and therefore chazal established, bracha al hanatila lekriyat shema ulatfila, that before you say the tfilot in the morning, after you were sleeping, and you don't know where your hands were going, so you should be careful before you engage in tfilah, you should wash your hands to purify yourself. Okay, so that's reason number one. That would seem like the most technical, most simple level of a reason. It's a more pragmatic concern, and we're going to get back to what I think might be actually going on there on a little bit of a deeper level. So reason number two brings the Mishnah Berurah. Harashba Katav, one of the other Rishonim writes, Lefisha b'shachar achar hashena, in the morning after sleeping, anu na'asim kibirya chadasha. When a person wakes up, this relates to what we learned last week. When a person wakes up in the morning, you are a new creature. You are waking up to a new existence, a new refreshed sense of self. It's a new day, it's a new beginning, it's a new start. Dichtiv, as it says in Iov, Chadashim lev karim rabba munatecha, that things are new in the morning. We wake up new in the morning. Great is your reliability, God. Trichan anu lehodo lo yitbarach. We have to thank Hashem. Shebra anu lechvod that created us for His glory. Lisharto, to serve Hashem. Ulevarich shmo, and to sanctify, to bless His name. Valdavar zet tiknu b'shachar kol otan habrachot, and that's why we have all those brachot. We make 18 brachot in the morning. Berachah Shachar and the Berachah Torah and Elokai Neshama, all these different brachot we make in the morning. Shanu Mevarchim Mechol Boker every morning. Lachin Gam Davar Zeh Tiknu. So this is part of that entire process of that sense of refreshed awakening in the morning and thanking God for this new opportunity. Tiknu B'Shachar Lehit Kadesh B'Kedushato, that we are told, instructed to sanctify ourselves in God's sanctity. V'litol yadenu, and to take our hands, literally litol, to take our hands, but to wash our hands, min hakli, from a kli. Kikohen shemekadesh yadav, he adds a line here that I think is really beautiful. You might just gloss over if you're doing this quickly, but I think these last few words are really, really incredible. when we are washing our hands in the morning, we are like a Kohen that is sanctifying his hands from the Kior, from the water basin in the Beit HaMikdash, Kodem Avodato, before his service in the Beit HaMikdash. The Kohanim in the Beit HaMikdash would wash their hands and their feet, but they would wash their hands before beginning their daily service in the Beit HaMikdash, of doing all the things of serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Beit HaMikdash. So too, when we wake up in the morning, we wash our hands, just like the Kohen, to prepare ourselves for a day of Avodas Hashem. Okay, that's reason number two. We're going to get back to tying these things together. Reason number three, this is not brought in the Mishnah Berurah, but this is brought in the Zohar. The Zohar says the following. Aval tachazi, says the Zohar, come and tachazi, come see. Raza de mila hacha de hale. So the raza de mila, the secret, raza, the hint, the raz, the secret of the of this idea of washing a person's hands in the morning is the following. De halet lach bar nash, there is no person, ba'alma, in the world, de lo ta'im dimusa belelia, a person at night has an experience of, we said this last week, a 60th of death, right? It's like a miniature ascent into the world above, and your soul and body leaves your body. It's a experience of death to some degree. Viruach misava sharya al hahugufa, and while your body is lying there without its soul, so there's a ruach misava, there's an impure spirit that now rests on it. Similar to what we saw in the beginning, right? That there is, in the Shulchan Aruch, there's a ruach ra, this spirit. My taima, why? Why does this impurity come to the person? Begin the nishmata kadisha istalket mina, mine debar nash, vinafket mine, that when the person's soul leaves the body at night, v'al dinishmata kadisha nafkat v'istalek mine, so when this, right, when the soul leaves, the holy soul leaves the body, shar yaruach misava al hahu gufa. So then the impure spirit comes onto the body because the body is there without the soul. V'ista'av v'kad nishmata it hadrat lagufa it aber hahu zuama. Okay, it's continuing the same idea. V'ha itmar di yadoi debar nash zuadma. So when the person wakes up, that impurity leaves them when the soul comes back to the body. But the place that the impurity lingers for some reason, whatever reason this is, we have to look into this, but the impurity lingers still in the hands of the person. Ishtar bahu, that's where it remains. Va'alda lo yavur yadoi al enoi. And that's why a person's hands, before they wash their hands, shouldn't go pass over. Yavur shouldn't touch your eyes. Begin da hahu ruach misava sharya aloi, because the impure spirit is still on, that impure presence is still on the person's hands. Ad natal, until you go, dinatal lo and vekad natal yadoi kidekachazi kidein it kadosh vikrai kadosh. Until you go and you wash your hands, and then these last few words are very interesting, and once you've washed your hands, what happens? Ikri kadosh, you're now called holy. Okay, so what's going on here? What is this? And what are these different reasons? So I think the idea really actually is fairly simple. I think the idea is that all three of these ideas are actually really in essence the same point. The point being that netilat yadayim in the morning, waking up and having the refusion, the reconnection, the reuniting of the soul and the body is a moment where we are supposed to enter into an awareness and a cognizance of the relationship between body and soul. That's when Netilat Yadayim is. It's supposed to be a moment of reconnecting and recalibrating ourselves to understand what the role of the body is and what the role of the soul is. To realize that our bodies are the kli, are the vessel toward, for the soul. And the idea being the following, the connection to what we just saw, is that the soul is kind of like the values, right? So it's more than that. It's in a more spiritual sense. But on the most basic level, the soul is our moral compass, right? The soul is our grounding of values and goodness and spirituality. The body is the vessel, is the tool for being able to enact those values and that spiritual inclination. It's the means towards activating and bringing to life what the soul knows is right, what the soul strives to accomplish. The body without the soul is just a lifeless vessel. and it's just animalistic. And that's what it means, I think, that there's this impurity that exists in the body, comes over the body when the soul leaves it. I don't know if it means, I'm not saying it doesn't mean this also, but I don't think the emphasis is that there's this kind of, you know, what's the word? I'm blanking on the word right now, but... I'm blanking on the word. But it's not just this, you know, ridiculous, you know, irrational, senseless idea of there's an evil spirit. The idea is that the body without the soul has no sense of direction. It has no purpose. It has no values. It's just animalistic. And that's the idea, I think, of that idea of the hands, right? Your hands, when you don't have your soul in yourself, so your hands, who knows where your hands went, right? So on the most basic level, it means pragmatically. We have to be concerned that your hands touched something that it now needs to be purified before you go to tefillah. But I think more deeply, the point there is it doesn't just mean pragmatically. It means representing that your hands without your soul, who knows where they're going, right? That's the point. They're lost. They're directionless. There's no sense of purpose, of values, of any moral or spiritual inclination and sense of rightness and wrongness. It's just animalistic. That's the idea of the first point, I think, is that the first reason the Mishnah Berurah brought is that we don't know where our hands went. We have to wash them when the soul comes back. The second point was that we saw is that the impure spirit resides... that's the third. The second one is that you're created anew, right? You're created with a new sense of purpose and a new sense of avoda today, like the Kohanim before they start the work in the Beit HaMikdash. So to every single person, when you wake up in the morning, you're starting your new day of avoda. And that's the same idea, is that the body without the soul, it's just, there's no direction, there's no purpose, there's no plan of action, there's no plan of a sense of accomplishment of what I'm striving for. So the soul comes back into the body. What that moment is of Netilat Yadayim is saying that this body, these hands, actually can have a purpose now. Now that the soul is re-entering, giving me that sense of where I need to be going. So now I need to purify my hands and say, and recognize that these are a tool towards purity. These are the means I have towards activating those values and those aspirations of the soul. And then the third piece of the Zohar is the exact same thing. The third piece of the Zohar is that when the person is sleeping and the soul and the body are not connected, so then when you're reawakened, right, so there's that impure spirit that comes onto a person, the idea again being that when you're lost without the soul, without that grounding of where you're going, what you're supposed to be doing, so that's what the impurity means. And that's what Netilat Yadayim is. So I think Netilat Yadayim is actually, and I've never thought about this before looking into these ideas, but it's an amazing moment where it's the reconnection of the body and soul. And what we're doing when we're washing our hands is we are recognizing the relationship between body and soul. And we start off our day in that way, right? But we start off our day by recognizing, saying to ourselves, this is what my body is for. It's a tool, it's a vessel towards receiving direction for the soul, from the soul. But as my good friend Chavrusa, Stu Muller, likes to point out, vessel, kli, so it's not just a recipient, but it's also a facilitator. A kli is not just a recipient, but it's a facilitator to move something from one place to the next. So the point is the soul, the relationship is that the soul the body is receiving from the soul, but it's also what allows the soul to bring out towards the outside.
It's also interesting. So what do we say right before we say Netilas Yadayim?
Yeah.
Shechazarta bi nishma si.
Right.
Okay, so you're saying he brought back my neshama, exactly. And then you watch.
Exactly.
So it kind of ties it together.
Exactly, 100%.
Yeah.
And it's an amazing moment. I never thought of this before. So I thank you all for this motivation to work on this. But I never thought of this before. It's an amazing moment. It's the moment of awareness that we have a soul, right? Just think about that. How often do we think about the fact that we have a soul? So every morning we're recognizing that our soul is re-entering us, and that our essence is our soul, and our body is the tool for the soul. And we recognize that that's the purpose of the body by washing the hands and purifying them, just like the Kohen starting off his avodah in the Beit HaMikdash.
Talking about morning Netilat Yadayim?
We're talking about morning Netilat Yadayim, yeah. Yeah. The connection to other Netilat Yadayim would be something we have to work on further. So there's a really interesting midrash. It's a little bit long, but I think it's worth reading together. In source number 3 here, if we unfortunately printed the wrong source sheet, so I emailed it to people. But okay, so in Vayikra Rab it says the following: Daber el bnei Yisrael lemor nefesh ki techta. So that's the pasuk in Vayikra talking about when a person sins. Okay, so the following comment of the Medrash is really interesting. Tani Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Yishmael taught mashal lemelech is a metaphor to a king. Shahayalo pardes. There was this field, and there were these, I don't know exactly what I tried figuring out what this means, but something was growing there, some plant, some really nice plant was growing there. And the king wanted to put guards, you know, to secure it, to watch over it. One of them was crippled, and one of them was blind, the two guards, okay? The Amar Lahen, and the king said to them, "His ha'aru al b'chor hanaot elu." So be careful, watch over this area. Liyamim Amar Chiger l'suma. So after a bunch of days, the cripple said to the blind person, "B'choro naot ani ro b'pardes." I see this beautiful field. Amar lo suma, so the blind one said to the cripple, "Havei v'nechal." So bring them and we'll eat. We'll enjoy them. Amar lo chiger, so the cripple said, "V'chi acholni lahalich, am I able to walk to go get them?" Amar suma, so the blind said, "V'chi roani, am I able to go see, to know, to take them?" Rachav chiger al gabi suma, so what did they do? The cripple carried the blind person. So the blind person obviously told, the blind person carried the cripple. So the blind person was able to be the one physically walking. And the blind person, I keep saying it wrong. You all got it. I'm just going to leave it. Okay.
Cripple
navigator. Yeah, exactly. And they enjoyed. Come on, then they went back to their places. And after a couple of days, the king came to this field. Amar lahan, and he said to them, where what happened to the field? Where'd it go? Amar lo suma. So the blind person said, "Adoni hamelech, my master, the king, v'chi roani. Are you accusing me that I use them? Don't you know I can't see?" Amar lo chiger. The cripple said, "Adoni hamelech, are you accusing me? V'chi yachol ani lahaloch. Do you think I could have taken them? I can't walk." Oto hamelech shahaya pikeach ma aslahen. So this king was wise. He wasn't a fool. So what did he do? So he showed them that obviously they can figure out what you came up with. Amar lahen, he said to them, "Kach asitem," this is what you did, "v'achaltem et habachor," and this is how you were able to partake. Kach la'asid lava kadosh baruch hu omer lenefesh. So too, in ultimately, Hashem is going to come and save our souls. Mipnei ma chatos lefanai, why did you sin it before me? Amar lefanav, the soul is going to say, "Ribon ha'olamim, Master of the world, anilo chatasi hagufu shachati." The body is what sinned before you. Mishashi yatsasi mi menu kitzipor tehora porachas ba'avirani. Since the time I left you, the soul is saying, since the time I left you, I've been as pure as a beautiful bird, soaring in the air. Machatasi lefanecha, I didn't sin before you. Amar laguf, omer laguf. So Hashem's going to say to the body, "Mipnei machatasi lefanei, why did you sin before me?" Amar lafan of the body will say, "Ribono ha'olamim, master of the world, ani lo chatasi, I didn't sin. Neshama hi shechata, the soul is what sinned. Mishas yatzasa mimeni ke'even shehushloch al gabi karka ani nishloch. I'm lifeless. I'm just a body. What can I do? Shema chatasi lafanecha. You think I sinned? Ma Hakadosh Baruch Hu osalehen. What does Hashem do? Mevi neshama vizorka baguf v'dan shneim ke'ach. He puts them together and he judges them together. So the idea of the Medrash is it's telling us the relationship that's supposed to be between the body and the soul. The soul is our vision. It's our sense of direction, of purpose, our aspirations. It's the source of desire of where we should be going, what we should be doing. It gives us our grounding, our moral, ethical, spiritual grounding. Our bodies are the means towards accomplishing those things in the real world, towards actualizing those values. And that's what the relationship is supposed to be. We spoke about this once, the idea of mekabel, mashpia and mekabel. There's always, in the world, there's always a relationship between one aspect being mashpia, that which gives, which influences, and that which is mekabel, that which receives and actualizes. And the question we always should be asking ourselves, we saw once before there, but Irv Kluger suggests this is a way of framing decisions for ourselves when we're not sure if this is the right thing to do, not the right thing to do. The question to ask yourself is, which part of me is the mashpia right now and which part's the makabel? Is my soul informing this decision and my body would be actualizing it? Or is this a body decision, right? Where is this coming from? What's the source here of this aspiration, this inclination, this desire? Is it soul or is it body? And the relationship, the ideal relationship between body and soul is exactly this idea. We say every time we use the bathroom, we make a bracha afterwards. And what's the end of the bracha? Rofe cholbasa umafli lasot. Right? He who heals every flesh, umafli lasot. What does mafli mean? Pella. What's a pella? A wonder. Something wondrous. Something mysterious, magical. What's it referring to? Anyone know what the Ramah says? The Ramah on the Shulchan Aruch says, the mafli, the pella, that we're making a bracha on, is the fusion of body and soul. Philosophers, those who believe in the existence of a mind beyond physical neurons, etc., believe in a soul of a person. This is an age-old question of, if you believe in the soul, how do the body and soul interact? Such fundamentally different types of beings. How do they actually interact? How do they fuse? This is an age-old philosophical question. And what we say is, yeah, mafli la asod. It's a pella, it's a wonder. This is how God created the world in some mysterious, magical way, that there is this connection between spirit and material, between body and soul. Why do we say that after going to the bathroom? Why do we focus on it then? So I haven't seen anyone say. I think it's because after engaging in something which is the most animalistic part of our day, we're saying, yes, but somehow even in this, there's a soul. I still have a soul. And that's part of the wonder of how could it be in such a physical material world that part of me is so animalistic, and yet I come from something so spiritual, something so elevated, something so holy, and somehow these two parts of me are actually fused together in this pele of a way, in this wonder of a way. And that's the idea, and that's the moment of Netilat Yadayim. All of that throughout our day, we're supposed to be trying our hardest, and it's not easy once the day gets going, but throughout our day, we're supposed to be maintaining that sense of that ideal relationship and that way of interaction between body and soul. We start off each day by ingraining, by taking on that mindset through Netilat Yadayim. The moment when the body and soul come refused, reconnected, we do Netilat Yadayim to recognize that this is what's happening. Let me start off the day on the right foot. In that way, I was thinking, I think it's just a cool idea that what does it mean al netilat yadayim? The bracha, baruch adam hashem elokeinu melechem, al netilat yadayim. What does it mean netilat yadayim? Yeah, what does it literally mean?
It doesn't make sense to me literally. Something like, I'm taking the hand.
I'm taking the hands, right? It's strange, right? What does it mean?
I wonder why they choose that language.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyone know? My grandmother's a Hebrew professor, and she thinks this. She's been very bothered by this for a long time. So if she doesn't know, I certainly don't know. But with that said, so I found one interesting thing, and then we'll get back to another explanation, which I think is the more general way of explaining it. But I just want to share with you something I think is really interesting, and tell me if you can make any sense of this. Source number 4, the Beit Yosef quotes, V'katav Rabbeinu Yerucham Benetiv Tet Zayin, Yudvav Chelik Vav. He's quoting one of the earlier Rishonim, that says, umevarich al netilat yadayim. Why do we make a bracha al netilat yadayim? What's the language of netila? Al shem hakli, shenikra antil. The name of the kli, of the cup, what we call a washing cup, apparently was called, back in the day that they made the bracha, they made this text, it was called, I don't know how to pronounce it exactly, an antil. So they said the bracha was al netilat yadayim. Oh, okay, good. There you go. There you go. So, yeah, I guess that makes sense. So that's why we make the bracha al netilat yadayim. So, good, okay. Why are we making a bracha on the kli? Why is the bracha on the name of the kli? Who cares about the kli? Why is the bracha on the kli? Why isn't it al rechitzat yadayim? Al taharat yadayim? On something like that. Why al netilat yadayim? Who cares about the kli? Yeah, the kli does the action, good. But so what? So what? Anyone have any thoughts?
Well, the kli is the connection between the action and, you know, the body and the soul. It's like the vessel that carries it through.
the washing cup itself is?
Well, it gives the means to do it.
Aha, uh-huh, okay. Okay. So that's like what Dennis is saying. Right. This is what you use to actually right. do it. Right. So I always wanted to suggest what you're saying is probably more the pshat. Go ahead.
Tilat Yadayim if you don't use the cup.
That's a good question, actually. Yeah. It's a discussion. It's a big discussion. I think halacha lamasa, you need to use a cup. Where that it actually is a discussion. If you don't have access to a cup or to water, there are b'di'evid ways. Jeff apparently just learned this. So you can answer the question better than me. But there are other ways that you can be mekayim this halacha. I think.
So therefore, you can't do it without the kli here. That whether you can't if you can't really do it halachically without the cup, then the bracha includes the cup.
Okay, but it still seems like it's just a. Meaning, it's a technical means towards the mitzvah. I wouldn't have thought that the bracha should be, when making a bracha, focusing on one thing. Of all the things to choose to focus on, why are we focusing on the kli? That's just the means towards doing the mitzvah.
It isn't just a colloquial or whatever, you know, just a way we say it.
Maybe.
If it's called this because of what the Yiddish word was, mm-hmm. whatever, maybe it's not actually, you know, we're not saying the bracha al netilat yadayim. We use the expression, mm-hmm. Let's go say al netilat yadayim. Mm-hmm. It's not exactly what we're doing.
It's just colloquialism.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it's sort of saying. Yeah.
So the pshat level, you're all saying is probably right. Okay. What I wanted to suggest is something a little bit more. Is that the whole purpose of netilat yadayim, as we've been saying, is the concept that my body is the kli to the neshama that's re-entering it. So we focus on the kli in the bracha because this is the whole idea of netilat yadayim is connecting to an awareness of the fact that my body is the kli towards the neshama that's coming back to me right now.
The water is Hashem for
the soul. Oh, interesting. Okay, that's nice. Yeah, maybe. So maybe that's why the focus of the bracha is actually on the kli, because that's really the whole point of the netilat yadayim, is recognizing that relationship between body and soul. The body, this physical world, the body is just the kli towards accomplishing the aspirations of the soul. And I think that this is really just an amazing way to start off a day, is to recognize that I am beginning this day with an awareness that I'm here to do something, right? The other idea of, like, who's mentioned this before? So the other idea of netilat yadayim is what you were saying before. So I think the general interpretation of netilat yadayim, not this idea of the kli, the general interpretation is that netilat yadayim is to raise up our hands. And that's why the halacha says, some people actually do this, is that when you make the bracha, you actually lift up your hands. After you wash them, before you dry, you lift up your hands. And some people actually even say, se'u yideichem kodesh. We raise our hands in kedusha. And the idea, I think, is, again, on the Tilat Yadayim, is that I, as my soul re-enters me, why is the soul coming down to this physical world, to this material body? It's coming here to do something. It's coming here to give a purpose and a sense of mission, a sense of value-driven life, to accomplish and contribute something to this physical world, to this physical body that I am. And that's how we start off our day, with this recognition that I'm supposed to be doing something. And the hands, obviously, represent that. The hands represent the ability to accomplish, to contribute, to do something, to be generous, to be giving.
I think the juxtaposition of what we learned about last week, where, you know, the soul is kind of returned to us, a bit of passivity that we're blessed with, and then this is our action. This is like the I and the
Oh, that's very good, right? So the Moda Ani is like the receiving, and then the Netilat Yadayim is like, okay, now that I received, now I'm stepping into action, right? Oh, that's very, I didn't think about that. That's phenomenal. Thank you. Very good. So I think that's really a great segue. So the point being that that's how we start off our day. So I want to just talk about this a little bit. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein has an article that I really like. I never studied under him, so I can't say for sure. But my impression was that he wasn't generally a harif person, as they call it, or a musser person, someone who would, you know, really be kind of like up in your face, right, with like telling you this is bad and, you know, you got to do this and fix yourself and fix these ways. I don't think that was his style so much. But there's this one article that he wrote which really is very harif. But he's saying it, not me. So let's read it together. I think it's really interesting. And the truth is, I even took out a couple of paragraphs where he really goes off a little bit. So this is the watered down. I mean, not really, but
because it just so happens Thursday morning, Mara and I are going to Key West.
Okay, so yeah. So it's good. I took out some.
And it's a kosher restaurant.
So he writes here about what he calls glatt kosher hedonism.
Yeah.
Okay, and he bemoans this, laments this concept of glatt kosher hedonism. And he writes the following. In recent years, one observes on the American scene a terribly disturbing phenomenon, the spread of hedonistic values, but with a kind of glatt kosher packaging. There was a time when the problem of hedonism for religious Jews didn't often arise, because even if you wanted to have the time of your life, there wasn't very much that you could do. The country clubs were all barred to Jews. There weren't many kosher restaurants. There were no kosher nightclubs, etc. In the last decade or two, a whole culture has developed geared towards frum Jews, where the message is enjoy, enjoy, enjoy. And everything has a hechsher, kosher certification, and a super hechsher. The message is that whatever the Gentiles have, we have too. They have trip to the Virgin Islands, we have trip to the Virgin Islands. Consequently, there has been a certain debasement of values in which people have a concern for the minutiae of halacha, which of course one should be concerned about, but with a complete lack of awareness of the extent to which the underlying message is so totally non-halachic and anti-halachic. Don't misunderstand me. I'm not opposed to people enjoying themselves to some extent. I'm not arguing for a totally ascetic approach to life. I don't live that way myself, and what I don't practice, I'm certainly not going to preach. In a sense, I don't practice it because I don't really think that it is demanded. There certainly were gedolim, great rabbis, who did advocate it, but others disagreed. The question is something else entirely, and this is why I said you're really okay. The question is something else entirely. The question is not whether there is room in human life for a person to have a certain measure of pleasure. Rather, the question is what is his basic perspective? How much does he involve himself in this? Does he or she see himself or herself as basically being born to enjoy or to work? The point being that it's not that we can't enjoy ourselves, but the point is, what is our basic sense of what am I doing here? Am I here to enjoy myself? And I hope part of being able to enjoy myself is that I can't feel like I'm a bad person. So I need to do a few couple of things, of nice things, of acts of chesed, so that I can actually enjoy myself and feel like a good person. And that's a real way. Or do I live because I'm here to do something, to contribute something, to accomplish something? And along the way, I'm supposed to be a healthy and normal person that I can enjoy myself and take vacations and go out to eat and have a good time. But my basic sense of purpose is not enjoy, enjoy, and then on the side do a couple of nice things. My basic sense of purpose is I'm here to do something, to accomplish something. And I think the idea of Netilat Yadayim is that every single morning we wake up and we ingrain that in ourselves when we wash our hands. We say, these hands are supposed to be holy. These hands are not supposed to be selfish hands. They're supposed to be generous hands. These hands are supposed to be pure, like the Kohen in the Beit HaMikdash. These hands are supposed to do something to give to the world and not just to take from the world. I am waking up today saying, Moda Ani, I received my soul, and now I'm stepping into action, beginning with Netilat Yadayim, to say that now my hands, my body is reinvigorated, revitalized, rejuvenated with a new sense of purpose, my soul re-entering my body. And that really is the beginning of what Aaron Lichtenstein's article was about. This was just the very end of it. The beginning was that he says that man was created, if you look back in the beginning of Bereshit, la'ovda u'lishomra, to guard and to keep and to perpetuate and to work and improve and develop this world. That's what we were placed in this world to do. And that's what we wake up every morning and we recognize. There's a poem by, I'm sure many people are aware of, Lichtenstein also has a PhD in literature. And apparently my Rebbe, so again, like I told you, I never learned by Rav Aaron, but a number of my Rebbeim did. One of my Rebbeim, Rabbi Ben Darsh, Rabbi Asaf Ben Darsh in Israel, in the Gerus Kol in Israel. So when he gave a eulogy, hesped for Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, he said that there was one time in Yeshiva in Gush that Rav Aaron gave a Sichos Musar on a poem from Robert Frost, this poem. That was his text for his sicha. And he read it, and he said, and Ben Dar said, in eulogizing Rav Aaron, he said that the very end of it, he thought, really captured who Rav Aaron was. And I wanted to read this poem together. So he says, he writes, it's called Stopping by Woods on a Snowy Evening.
Like one of his most famous poems.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm personally not... a big mavenist, but I'm aware at least of that much. Whose woods these are, I think I know. His house is in the village, though. He will not see me stopping here to watch his woods fill up with snow. My little horse must think it queer to stop without a farmhouse near, between the woods and frozen lake, the darkest evening of the year. He gives his harness bells a shake to ask if there is some mistake. The only other sounds the sweep of easy wind and downy flake. The woods are lovely, dark and deep, but I have promises to keep, and miles to go before I sleep, and miles to go before I sleep. And the basic idea of the poem, which I'm sure many of you are familiar with more than myself, is that there's this beautiful woods on a beautiful snowy evening that this person traveling encounters and wants to stop in, but after stopping for a minute realizes there's so much more to do and has to continue. Miles to go before I sleep, miles to go before I sleep. And what Rabbi Bendarsh, I don't remember if he was explaining why he thinks Rav Aharon likes this poem, or this is what Rav Aharon himself said in the Musar Shmos, I don't remember, but either way, the idea was that we, in our lives, there is miles to go before we sleep, and miles to go before we sleep. There's always so much around us to do. And it doesn't mean we can never sleep, but it means that there's, when we wake up in the morning, Netilat Yadayim is this reinvigorated sense of purpose of what I can contribute, what I have to do for the world around me, miles to go before I sleep. Over and over again, right? And yes, we can stop in the woods and we can see the beautiful snowy evening, but what's our basic sense of purpose? What's our basic understanding of what am I doing here in this world? I'll just end with one other interesting thing I saw in the Kitvei HaRizal, in Shar HaKavanot.
Actually, I think just in this poem, it is saying, going back to a little bit of what Rav Lichtenstein said, which is, that your main purpose should be to keep going, but it's okay to take that moment mm-hmm. and really absorb the beauty around yeah. you, whether that is a vacation or it is a moment that you rest,
yeah.
so that you really can do that, but just keep going
yes.
and keep going.
Yeah. yeah, so that's a great point, because there's a balance that yeah, exists here.
Balance,
the person yeah. traveling here didn't blind themselves to not see what was around them. They took
right.
it in. But then they kept going,
right.
right? But they did take it in. So yeah, that's that well said.
Poem.
Yeah, yeah. So that's
come back from the Keys. Don't stay too long.
yeah. Bring my Bubba Basra.
so
in fact, you mentioned Eov. I was going to tell you. Well, you know, when did he live?
Well, yeah. Don't,
what,
well,
yeah.
No one knows.
Don't take Eov with you.
No. It's Bubba Basra.
yeah.
It's, yeah.
No, it's
so
thing, yeah.
just end with one. I yeah. saw in the Arizal points out that the bracha of Al Netilat Yadayim has 13 words.
Yeah.
Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam Asher Hekshanu Tzedakah V'Tzivanu Al Netilat Yadayim, 13 words. And he says the 13 is parallel to the 13 Midot HaRachman, the 13 attributes of kindness and mercy. And the idea is that, I think, he doesn't seek this part out, but I think it's obvious what he's trying to say, is that we, like you said, we, Mo Da'ani, we're receiving our soul, and Netilat Yadayim, we're stepping into action now, we're springing into action, and what is our action? What are we using? How are we going to channel this action of the soul coming back into us? What are we going to use these hands for? To embody the 13 Midot HaRachma of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to embody and to spread those 13 attributes of kindness and mercy and love and compassion and generosity to all those around us. That is the contribution. That's why the Baruch Hu Netilat Yadayim, which is the beginning, it's the platform, the foundation of how we're going to spend that day, every single day of giving and working and miles to go before we sleep, through the 13 Midot HaRachma that the soul brings into our body of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the 13 Midot HaRachma of compassion and kindness and generosity. Lila Tov, everyone.
I found your, by the way, I found your